Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review this Friday's episode. I never know which day they put it on, of AEW Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0, pay-per-views, premium live events, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review.
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number.
This is Rampage, baby. And it sure was.
It sure was Rampage. I honestly had a little bit of fun with this.
Yeah.
There were elements where I thought, you know what, this is over-delivered. And there were elements where I thought, you know what, I should have had higher hopes for this match because it's really fun and there's a few moments in it that I thought were good.
That's the nicest thing you can say.
Such a low bar. Like, I'm just so detached from the show. We've talked ceaselessly about the Rampage quality and just how inessential and small time and missable it is. And, you know, it's one of those. I could have went my entire life nicely without thinking, Jesus Christ, that May episode of Rampage, can't believe I missed that. Can't believe that was spoiled for me. Can't, those unforgettable moments. Never happens, ever. But, you know, if you can, that's a thing. I know I can get boring and I know I can get pedantic, but I hate not having that, oh, it's AEW feeling.
Yeah.
And it's content. This is good content, mostly, but it was still very much content.
A few more weeks and then maybe that feeling will come colliding back in. I don't know. Collisions.
Just do the recap and I'll give you my thoughts.
Fair enough. Blackpool Combat Club, John Moxley, Claudio and Wheeler Yuta versus the Best Amigos started out this show. Bandido just showcasing his brilliant talents immediately. Moxley takes him to the corner. Bandido flips out, hits a drop kick. I like the fact that you alluded to this on the preview, in fact, that they made reference of, the best friends are kind of pissed off with Wheeler Yuta for just sort of leaving him in the lurch after sort of stepping up when Trent got injured and then going, oh, has had his head turned by the Blackpool Combat Club. And that was exemplified by Chuck Taylor slamming him into the barricade here. The best friends cleared the ring. Stereo dives. Bandido hit a bloody Asai moonsault. That took us to a break. No, it didn't. Just not yet, because Trent went for a big crossbody on Moxie when they sent them back inside, but Claudio hit a huge uppercut out of the air for a knockdown to take us to the break. When we come back, Chuck's in trouble, but he manages to hit a tornado DDT on Moxley. Bandido gets the hot tag, comes in, Tornillo out of the corner, springboard Hurricane Rana pin, or a pin attempt for a two count. He sets up for the delayed vertical suplex. Yuta makes the save, though. But in come the best friends, and they hit that soul food half and half combo thing that they do. There's a big moment where the best amigo's got to give the people what they want. Taylor hits Yuta with a snap pile driver. Taylor tries that seatbelt pin of Wheeler Yuta's. Moxley breaks it up, though, by just coming in with a drop kick. And everyone starts hitting big moves. Taylor sets up for the awful waffle, gets cut off. Moxley Death Rider and the rocket launcher from Claudio and Yuta simultaneously gets the 1-2-3.
I just love the continuity in this promotion. Like, even if the big storylines aren't hitting, like, there's always stuff bubbling under the surface. There's always stuff that's remembered. There's always these nice little reminders that AEW just tell very different stories. That, again, when they're major storylines, the angles aren't really hitting. There's still that years-long continuity that no one loses track of, or they very rarely lose track of. So I just love the seatbelt law, and it just gives you the impression that every last little thing that you see in the storylines on the television program matter to these characters. And then they're just, it's easier for the purposes of immersion to believe what you're watching. So I really appreciated those sequences. I thought going into this match that the stuff that would blow me away the most would be the exchanges between Bandido and Claudio. They were as fantastic as you would expect. Mm-hmm. Like, the timing of those Rana reversals was just magnificent. You really thought if they were like a nanosecond off, mm-hmm. Claudio's head was getting driven against that canvas. But I loved especially the exchanges between Trent and Wheeler Yuta.
Mm.
Like, they realize as wrestlers and storytellers that they've got this bad blood that, again, simmers. It's not really emphasized in the narrative, but it matters to them, and they'll never really forget. And they just worked their sequences, the real sense of competitive energy, as if to say, all right, you think you're a better wrestler than me, and you think you're going to be a better wrestler than me by joining these. Well, I'll tell you what, I will pull the deepest arm drag you've ever seen as a counter, and you never expect it, and I'll fly you across the ring and see how much you can, how little you can learn from me when I do stuff like that to you. So I thought loads of character work, loads of continuity manifesting in some lovely liquid exchanges. And I'll tell you one thing that I really loved about this as well, how it all sort of pays off the idea of why John Moxley turned heel and the wrestler he is now as a heel, the character and the story he's telling now. So the idea is that in the Texas Death Match, after they were so close throughout their TV program, Hangman Page turned the violence around on John Moxley, who tried to do a big Bruiser Brody cosplay, this sort of retro, macho, old school type of showing that you're a badass, wrapped the chain around his neck, tried to be this big badass, and Hangman Page was like, well, I'll just strangle you then because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to cosplay as a badass because you're obsessed with it when you don't know what it really takes anymore. And I love how they developed this, or how Moxley rather developed this, when the sequence where Trent hit him with a German and he did the strong style pop up and defiant roar. Trent hits him with another one. He pops up with a strong style defiant roar and then realizes, oh, hang on, I've been knocked loopy here, and just falls over.
Kyle O'Reilly-esque.
Yes, it was Kyle O'Reilly-esque. And I just love that from a character perspective of this guy. He's taking shortcuts now. He's being a bully now. He's been exposed as the inferior brawler to Hangman Page in storyline. And now he's, like, overcompensating. And he's trying to, like, you know when a football manager is, like, getting accusations of you're punished, your tactics are all wrong, and you really need to evolve to stay in the game. And they just defiantly play 4-4-2 and the long ball and all these things that they know don't work for them anymore, but that's all they know. And that's Moxley doing a pro wrestling version of this. He's really like trying to embody the badass without really remembering what it is that it takes to be a badass. And I just love the slapstick element of this. Great showing ass in a really unique way to John Moxley. I had lots and lots of fun with this. Genuinely throwaway filler, all action, well worked, but nothing you'll remember. But there was just a lot of thought went into this. And that's what I love. I say this all the time. The thought that goes into a good AEW match, let alone the excellent blowaway memorable ones. Like, the thought that goes into these, you're on Rampage, 10 minutes, put something together. And they really care about putting it together. So, yeah, I had a lot of time for this and I enjoyed it.
We got a promo from Carl Fletcher next, explaining his attack on Orange Cassidy. He says, I was born and raised in bloody Australia, made a name for myself in England via WCPW.
He didn't say that.
He didn't say that, but no, I added that. I won titles in Japan and won titles in the US. Look, no one is more fitting than me to be AEW International Champion.
Got a good case for it.
Sets up the match for AEW Dynamite that you will be in attendance for.
Who did the report? I can't remember who did the report, but it was reported that the reason why they're pushing Orange Cassidy so hard is to soft launch and level up the international title as a world title that could potentially carry Collision. Who called that?
Yeah.
Who said weeks ago, international is a synonym of world. This is a pretty deft, insidious way of making it feel over time like, you know what, this is kind of like a world title actually, as opposed to just saying, oh, this is a world title. Take it seriously.
Yeah.
Which you can't. So they're trying to do the hard work. I don't necessarily like diluting the world title, but there's a way they have to do it. This is a far superior way.
PW Insider's Mike Johnson with that report.
Very credible man.
Then we got the Jade Cargill TBS Championship Open Challenge. Well, several, in fact. Beforehand, Excalibur, with footage, talks about Taya Valkyrie failing in her challenge for the TBS Championship. But obviously, they had banned the road to Valhalla. And then she obviously tried to hit on referee Aubrey Edwards and got suspended, but that suspension's over. So first up, Jade Cargill took on Danny B, who must have been absolutely buzzing to challenge for the title. It's a shame because Danny B was already in the ring because I had my money on her music being Sting.
Cargill.
What?
Jade Cargill.
I don't get it. Danny B. Sting.
What?
Bees have got a little
f*** off.
Rule of three. She's buzzing to try and challenge for the title.
Music yeah, and Sting. I get it now. I'm an idiot, but you're a bigger one.
Okay. So Cargill hits her with a forearm. Fall away slam. She got the win via the pump kick, which was interesting because I thought she'd target the bee's knees. But she went to 58-0. Sid, your thoughts?
None. Carry on.
Mark Sterling runs his mouth and says, oh, is that the best you've got to offer, Texas? We thought it'd be this bloody pathetic, so let's have someone else. And out comes Genesis, who has an amazing story, by the way. They sort of just threw this away on commentary. And I was like, well, don't overlook that fact. It's an incredible story that she's got. Where is it? I've got it here. She was trainees, Dustin Rhodes Wrestling Academy. She had a stroke, was paralyzed, and has learned to walk and speak again, and then has got back into pro wrestling. Amazing.
That's amazing. So much so that if she's not there and she's green and she's a trainee, I'm not advocating that she defeats Jade Cargill.
No.
I am not saying that. But with that kind of marketable backstory, if they, for example, because that's pure babyface fair. That,
oh, God, yeah.
If they wanted to heat up Toni Storm out of her title challenge at Double or Nothing. One, which is a bit cruel for beating someone who's experienced that. And two, you potentially soft launch a babyface with an incredibly admirable story. And remember when they took the Road 2 seriously, or even did the Road 2, and they built TV matches with these sit-down interviews, sometimes with a talking head. Like, it used to be a really good program. That would have been great to, like, potentially plant a seed of, well, she can't lose. She's faced tougher adversity than a TV match, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit profligate.
Yeah, in the match itself, she just got
her ass kicked.
Yeah, Jade was like, you can have one shot for free, and then I'm just going to whip you into the ropes, spear you, and hit Jade to go to 59-0.
I like that, though. The ropes should be employed as a weapon far more than they are in pro wrestling. You forget that they're meant to be a weapon. An Irish whip, realistically, it's meant to be a whip into the ropes because the ropes hurt.
Mm.
I understand that the modern style has evolved well past that. You have to use the ropes to get over in front of a modern audience. I'm not stupid, but if you can throw someone at them with sufficient force, you could take it back to the past a little bit.
Yeah.
And they did here. I thought that was a great, really creative spot.
Then Mark Sterling gets on the mic again. He's like, you think what I'm thinking? Let's go for the big 60-0.
sorry, that was the Sidgwick. Are you a dickhead, Claxon? Are you a hypocritical dickhead because you hate impromptu matches? If you listened to the promos from Mark Sterling, it was apparent that they'd actually scheduled these matches. And they weren't, bring someone else out from the back right now. I'm booking the show. It was careful.
You've
to
got 5 minutes. All right, we'll see how many people we can beat
exactly.
in that time.
They were careful to differentiate. Trust me, I don't even care about defending Rampage anymore. But I thought just to get ahead of anything.
So another challenger comes out, but before anything can happen, Taya Valkyrie's music hits. She makes her entrance and lays out this woman who, poor girl, didn't do anything at that point. Valkyrie storms down to the ring. Layla Gray goes to face her, and she gets laid out, of course. She storms into the ring, hits Cargo with a huge clothesline, the Road to Valhalla, grabs the mic and says, "Who's that bitch? I'll see you at Double or Nothing." The rematch is on with, not anything goes, but you're allowed to hit your finisher now, Taya Valkyrie.
Yeah, why wasn't that clarified at the start? Why wasn't that clarified before the first match? Why in kayfabe is Tony Khan indulging the corny nonsense, or probably isn't on the straight and narrow, of smart Mark Sterling, only to then say, weeks later, oh yeah, of course he can do that. What has changed in the legal... has there been a really influential ruling
yes,
in American law that I've missed... that now allows her to hit it.
Yeah.
They just wanted to do two matches and pad out some time. And this was a really contrived way of going about it that, to me, makes zero sense whatsoever. Tony Khan's literally just said, oh, yeah, of course you can. Which leads me to believe that he didn't care enough about the women's segments in the first place to not overrule it immediately as a nonsense.
Mm, absolutely.
So what's changed, Wilborn? Nothing.
Pay-per-view's a lot closer now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Then it was time for the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass versus Varsity Athletes, Tony Nese, Josh Woods, Ari Daivari, Max Caster raps about Josh Woods' tiny boss. Yeah, tiny little boss.
Why would they do that when they know what they've tried and failed resolutely to get off the ground on WWE television? Maybe they don't watch The Miz, and quite frankly, I can believe that.
Why would I watch the show, Paul?
Why would I watch a shoe?
I did like... Oh man, they talked about it on this, and I thought, for a second... Hang on, where are we? They said... Billy Gunn's kind of on the run of his career, and I did think...
And I mean, folks, where's the lie?
It's incredible. I know it's the Acclaimed for the most, but he gets incredible reactions. And the stare down and the face off with everyone and the pose down with Tony Nese. Because like a lot of the times it's like, okay, Tony Nese, look at Tony Nese and his tiny knees and his incredible abs. And you go like, okay, well, anyone's going to look... inadequate against him. And then Billy Gunn comes in. I was like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah.
The old guy actually might have him beat here. So Tony Nese used the opportunity when Billy Gunn's teasing, taking his t-shirt off to attack him. But Gunn fires straight back, side suplex. They hit scissor me timbers and everyone, they all scissor for the crowd, but they take too long. And that manages to give Varsity Athletes time to come back into it and isolate Max Caster to take us to a break. When we come back, he makes his comeback. Billy Gunn beats down Ari Daivari at ringside. Bowens runs wild. Top rope leg drop on Tony Nese. Josh Woods gets chucked to the outside by Billy Gunn. They initially don't manage to hit the arrival. Tony Nese avoids it, hits a spin kick to the face. But as he tries to make a comeback, Bowens hits the arrival. Caster hits the mic drop. 1, 2, 3.
Aye, it was fine. It was fine. I tell you what, though, between this and the main event, I start to think, you know, the little things still work. And I still pop like a rube at the little things. Because when this match first started, because my priorities are like this, I said to myself, what's Billy Gunn wearing a T-shirt? Why are you wearing a T-shirt?
Yeah.
You're not one of those wrestlers who has something to hide. If anything, you have something to show off. And then it became apparent why he's going to do it to show off Tony Nese. He was going to do the abs thing. And then for, what, 30 seconds, Daddy Ass just got the bottom of his T-shirt, started to tease.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. And then decided to take it off.
Ah, you got a bigger pop by doing it after that.
I'm a simple-minded person when it comes to professional wrestling. I think way too much about it, by my own admission. Sometimes the magic is as simple as that. I wrote an article, right? 10 shortcuts, 10 secrets to a guaranteed pop in wrestling. Okay, mm-hmm. Still on the website, still on YouTube, where I ran through, right, okay, if you're a desperate pro wrestler and you need to get a reaction, and no matter what you do, you just cannot get these fans to make any noise whatsoever. Like, say if you're Triple H at WrestleMania, and you just, whatever you do, everyone just thinks it's boring and ponderous and it's deathly silent. Maybe he should read that article.
Yeah.
Because in it, I go through the 10 guaranteed ways of getting a pop. I won't spoil them all now. Go and check it out or watch the video. And one of them is just disrobing. Just taking off an article of clothing, because the examples I used were Hulk Hogan ripping off the T-shirt, Angel Garza just ripping off the pants. Whenever you see someone taking something off, you're like, yeah, take it all off. And now Daddy Ass is in the pantheon of getting over.
They do the trios match at the paper, or are they saving it for Collision?
Okada.
Yeah.
With the ripaway flares. It's like, oh, the old Okada's back. Jay White's in trouble. And oh, no, he's not, because he's beat him in 15 minutes. Wrestling is so simple. And I realize I'm a massive hypocrite, because I like, oh, it's got to be intricate. Every detail's got to matter. Doesn't. Just take your clothes off.
Saw the clip doing the rounds again over the weekend of when he just snaps, when he gets kicked in the face. And he's like, you made me bleed my own blood.
Oh, my God. Angle of the goddamn year.
Oh, my God.
One of my favorite angles of all time, though.
But yeah, do you think they're going to do the trios match at the Pape? It's very soon, obviously, and there's already like 8-9 matches on there. Or is it something that maybe, I think there's a poor journalism here. I do genuinely think there's a trios match set for Dynamite, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and they'll do a challenge there. It's House of Black versus Metalik, AR Fox, Blake Christian.
Yeah.
Remember him from NXT? I won't get the chance to run through this on the preview.
Got to see him live in Ring of Honor. He's great.
Can you remember very, very early in NXT 2.0?
Yeah.
What Blake Christian was going to be?
He's going to be a superhero.
Yes. So we'll go through this now. I would have saved it for the preview, but we're not together. Blake Christian, the former, what's his name in the Fed? Well, you Google that. So Blake Christian, I think it was actually shoot entangled romantically with Cora Jade at the time.
Yeah.
And she just,
Trey Baxter.
And I think Cora Jade had just won a match, or Trey Baxter had just lost a match. And either way, they were talking backstage. And I think Trey was like, oh, you know, I suck, I lost, or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember the context, but I do remember the segment. And Cora Jade said something to the effect of, oh, don't get yourself down. You might have lost, but you're still my superhero. Kiss, cuddle, she walks off shot. And then camera zooms in on Trey Baxter. And he goes, superhero. And I think they were going to make him a superhero, but then they released him.
Yeah.
So that's a shame. I would like to have seen that. Not for the right reasons, mind you.
Speaking of not for the right reasons, QTV.
Oh, God.
QT Marshall's talking to Aaron Solo about Matt Hardy and they delete stuff.
What was that about?
I don't know.
Is that because QTV is a thinly veiled, I hate to use this word in connection with it, satire, parody of the wrestling media, and Matt Hardy gets it in the neck, and they've just mentioned, They've buried Matt Hardy on QTV. Say, these bloody internet smart journals just love to bury Matt Hardy. So we're going to do it because we're just like them, because we're parodying it for some reason. Even though when this company is at its very best, if anything, the level of praise directed towards AEW is so fair and so nice.
I think it was just a way of them referencing Hardy's Twitter getting hacked and trying to take credit for it. By the way...
Yeah.
By the way, you know, Twitter hacks are what they are, and a lot of them I'm just like, eh. I will give credit to the hacker. Credit where credit is due. The tweet where they tweeted, "Hi, this is Matt. I'm really sorry," because they tweeted all the, you know, the worst things you could possibly imagine and accusations, and I'm not going to deal with it. Where they tweeted, "Hi, this is Matt. I do apologize for everything that's gone out. I've got my account back now, and you know, hopefully things can return to normal. We can move on." Next tweet: "Psych, bitch, still in charge of the account. I get a little bit of a pap."
Hacking is so awful.
You hate hacks.
I hate hacks, especially ones who use alliteration.
But QT Marshall announces he's entered them all, within reason, into the Blackjack Battle Royale.
Signed us up for a title shot. You just put your name on a bit of freaking paper, do you? That was the implication. How many?
Well, you are if you're running the show. Exactly. For Tony.
How many matches has QT Marshall won to warrant? I'm excited about Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
I'm going.
Yeah.
All going well to Double or Nothing. And, yeah, given who is on the card so far and who isn't, I'm kind of expecting, you know, Takeshita, Rush, Bandido, like all the great wrestlers in this Battle Royale. Otherwise, you have to ask questions about who's getting pushed, who's getting TV time in AEW right now, and why. If that Battle Royale isn't super loaded with these incredible, underutilized, international, really great talents, then questions should be asked.
Four big names already confirmed. Obviously, Orange Cassidy's going to be in it. Powerhouse Hobbs is in it. QT Marshall and Aaron Solo are in it.
Get them in early.
Get them out early.
Yeah. Do the whole relief angle of, it's going to be good now because the low-rent goobers who've ruined Powerhouse Hobbs a bit are out of there.
Yeah, I think we saw where they're heading with this. They've just sort of gone, this hasn't worked, which is what we said from the beginning. But QT Marshall's talking about Hobbs and the poster for AW Collision, and talking about Miro being on there. And Solo and Harley Cameron talk about Buff Bagwell, Blue Mini, and Tatanka. But they say the real story begins on June 17th. By God, I hope so.
Did you notice there was the most gentle of CM Punk allusions in QT's promo here? Like, you went, Hobbs is going to be there and other people are going to be there. It's the most gentle hint yet.
Tony Schiavone's in the ring. Here come the Hardy Boys.
Oh, God.
With Brother Zay. It is official. Double or Nothing. The three of them against the Guns and Ethan Page, where the stipulation being if Team Hardy wins, then they're going to get control of Ethan Page's contract, which really would be poetic justice. And Jeff says, "Hells to the yeah, man."
Oh, God.
That's verbatim, that.
Nah.
Out comes Ethan.
He sounded worse than you somehow.
Yeah, Ethan Page comes out to the stage and says, "Look, this has been going on for far too long."
And I mean, folks, where's the lie?
This is the second week in a row where they've apologized for.
Yeah,
this is the second week in a row where they've apologized for how long this has been going on, and it ended. So why, if you know it's bad, and you're basically saying, right, okay, this is the end, it's the end. Well, it's not, because you're going to get more contract stuff, probably. You have to apologize for why this is still going on. When you have in fact resolved it, like, what are we doing here with this?
It's a way to get the Hardys on the pipe, isn't it? Where you could probably just hoid them in the Battle Royal, couldn't you? I think you don't want to lose because they're going tag titles future-wise, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you could just build them up on telly.
You just book them well, is what you're saying, yeah.
People like the Hardys and I don't, so I'm not going to say it's a big disgrace, even though I personally think it is. The Hardy Boys are massively over. They kind of always will be at this point. I can understand from a strictly business perspective why they are going to get an FTR match, and why you would want to promote the Hardys as a big deal ahead of that match by putting them on a pay-per-view. I understand all of this, But my God, everything to do with Ethan Page and Matt Hardy. Can you not just do the Hardys and the Guns as a glorified number one contenders match so at least feels new?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Rather than continue to tether it to contract stuff and Ethan Page and Matt Hardy. I'm done. What was next?
Well, Ethan Page says he's annoyed at Brother Zay for their history, and he says, look, we were going to become the Moan event.
That's so much preferable to literally anything that I've seen from this program so far. And Ethan Page, Isaiah Cassidy tag team called the Moan Event, and just being a really brash, cocky heel unit. And they've got like contrasting styles, so the tag matches would be really good. You've just dangled a carrot in front of me there.
Yeah. He's like, shake my hand. And obviously Brother Zay doesn't want any part of this until it's revealed to all be a ruse, because he clutches Brother Zay and the Guns slide in and attack the Hardys. Chair shots for everyone. And then they place a chair over Brother Zay's neck and Ethan Page stomps down on it. Will Brother Zay ever moan again?
Maybe. How many times? At least Ethan Page wasn't on a Tron, but it's the same difference, really. How many times is this promotion in the last month, maybe two, 6 weeks, ran the heel is on the Tron or heel is in the ring, stealing focus from the incoming group of heel attacks?
Mm.
I'm sure we've seen it with Stokely Hathaway and the Firm. The BCC have done it quite a bit. Jericho Appreciation Society. Oh, yeah. Like, Jesus Christ, get a new angle. Get a new angle, TK.
Chris Jericho's on commentary, obviously, for this show, and he cuts a promo saying Adam Cole's a coward, and if he was here, he'd beat his ass. But, of course, Cole's banned from the building, so he appears on screen and says, well, every week I'm going to show up and beat your ass, actually. And Jericho says, you know what? I've spoken to the lawyers, and we've lifted the legal agreement about you being banned from the building as long as you accept an unsanctioned match with me at Double or Nothing. And Cole thanks Jericho, accepts the match. Jericho rips up the contract, banning him from the building. Of course, Adam Cole immediately walks in to beat up Chris Jericho. He walks through the crowd, runs up the ramp, and the big brawl between Chris Jericho and Adam Cole, they keep getting separated and coming together. Excited for that match at Double or Nothing.
I am, legitimately. It'll be loud. It'll be loads of fun. I think it'll be much better than a lot of people are forecasting. I've really enjoyed this wider storyline for reasons I've repeated ad nauseum. I do wish, however, that Adam Cole had issued the challenge.
Yeah.
Just a baby face saying, I want the fight, you heel arsehole. Particularly after what Jericho engineered to happen to Baker. Feels like the baby face should have laid that challenge down.
Does unsanctioned match make you think...
It's not going on last.
No, make you think. Lots of weapons, obviously, interference, and dare I say it, and I'm just completely speculating here, guys, it's maybe hope more than expectation. The return of Kyle O'Reilly?
Oh, I hope so. It's gone quiet on Kyle O'Reilly. A few people have intimated that. You know, it's going slow, the recovery, but he'll be there, he'll be there. They save a return or a debut for a pay-per-view, so if he gets sort of... JAS come out, beat him down. Roddy comes out to help. Numbers take advantage. And then Kyle O'Reilly comes on the Tron. And then a returning babyface has the power of like four people or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he can have the Undisputed Era reuniting. And that can be a happy ending.
Or the Numbers game catches up.
Adam Cole's got about 5 minutes already. He's got Bandido and Orange Cassidy.
Of course, yeah.
By extension, he's now got Chucky T and Trent and Adam and Keith Lee as well.
Oh, yeah?
Like, yeah, that's a bit much.
What if they don't come out? Roddy does, though. Kyle comes out, but the Numbers game catches up to him. He's crawling and crawling. He's finally got away from Hager or whatever. Leans over to the crowd. Someone hands him a beer. He does one 12-ounce curl, and that brings it all back to him. Cool Kyle O'Reilly kicks everybody's ass.
Yeah, he seems to remember his training at the hands of Von Wagner.
Right, main event time.
It's not even that much of a relief this week.
No. Henry voiced a video package this time, and obviously ended with...
Well, looks like... time for the main event.
Bishop Khan versus Dustin Rhodes. I thought it was a nice sort of cyclical nature, very selfishly for the two of us. Nice cyclical nature to this because a few years back, Dustin Rhodes obviously worked Double or Nothing. That was my lucky enough to be my first AEW show that I went to. And he bled an absolute gusher. And he did it here on the eve of you going to your first AEW show in Las Vegas. Bishop Khan attacks Rhodes as soon as he gets in the ring. Rhodes clotheslines him to the floor. But the spot that busted him open kicked ass. Bishop Khan reverses the whip into the corner, and you think, okay, he's going to get posted. And then he came right into our living room. He just went face first into the camera, spilled to the floor, and he's busted wide open. Understandably, go to a break there. When we come back, Rhodes is fighting from underneath, tries his snap power slam, but Khan hits him with an air raid crash. Dustin Rhodes kicks out at one, hulks up, big slugfest, comes back, hits a code red, hits a pile driver, both of them get two counts. Bishop Khan hits a shotgun dropkick, misses the corner charge though, Rhodes hits the bulldog, final reckoning, 1-2-3. Dustin Rhodes gets the victory, but, well actually, let's talk about the match and then we'll talk about the post-match.
I really like this.
Yeah.
So much more than I was expecting. I'm trying not to be reductive about this, but there's very little to analyze, I guess, because it's a feeling that very few people can conjure, and one of them is Dustin Rhodes. So if you haven't watched Rampage, don't blame you. If you want to reduce this to the sum of its parts, you get a really methodical, slow beat down, get some color, struggle some more, fires up, trash talk, Cowboy's Last Stand, and kicks ass.
Yeah!
It sounds so basic, and about 95% of other wrestlers would not be able to do it, particularly against a level of wrestler like Bishop Khan, who is green, very athletic.
Yeah, looks the part.
Know any of the finished article, and his control spots weren't particularly compelling in and of themselves, but Dustin Rhodes is so timeless, he's so masterful at the little things, that he just elevated this match into something, into the realm of an overachievement by just timing and emoting and just doing the basics to near perfection. This was so much better than I had any right to be. I was watching Rampage of all shows, hungover at like 6:30 in the morning, and I was fired up.
Yeah.
Dustin Rhodes is a master. This is lovely to see. I hope the style of wrestling never goes away.
Mm.
Why would you throw this away if you can perform it like this? And one of my key thoughts before we get to the post-match, which I'll touch on very quickly because it was just obligatory, I want to watch Dustin Rhodes versus Jay White.
Ooh, I like that.
I really think that he's the heel to get. I think Dustin Rhodes has said he's retiring this year. If they want to do something big with Jay White, and they do, they didn't sign him to be just a guy. They've booked him to kind of be just a guy, but that's not their intention. I just think they've failed at booking him better. Jay White retiring Dustin Rhodes. I think they'd complement each other wonderfully. I think Jay White's got years left, obviously, and I think their styles and their approaches would mesh brilliantly and create pro wrestling magic. Like really heartbreaking, but effective pro wrestling magic. I'm going to tweet that later.
Good, I like that. But yeah, the post-match was about the Swerve and Keith Lee saga continuing because in comes Brian Cage, powerbombs Dustin Rhodes. Swerve comes down to the ring in his own inimitable style, smiles at this beatdown. But here comes Keith Lee.
Jacked as well.
Yeah. That pose at the end. I was just looking at his body. Yeah. Here comes Keith Lee. Brian Cage, Bishop Khan go to cut him off. But he takes them both down. He stares at Swerve. He climbs into the ring, but he's taking too long. Cage and Khan come back in and attack him with some punches and a chair shot. Cage gets Lee up, though. That's an amazing visual, that. Gets him up on his shoulders, F5s him onto the chair, and he gets sat on the chair, and Swerve hits the Swerve stomp whilst Dustin Rhodes watches on, pissing blood everywhere. And the heel stand over the lifeless body of Keith Lee to close out this show.
Another chair assisted beat down on the same show. That's lazy. I can't tell what I want more. I don't want another match added, especially after the trios one we expect to happen, that trios title. I don't need another singles match adding. Even though, you know, all going well, I'm going. I want the American experience of like a full night's sleep and watching it without having to go to bed for 4 hours and wake up at 1 o'clock.
Yes.
I don't know if they'll really feel long when you're there.
Yeah.
At the same time, this is a cold match, a long show ahead. Maybe a lot of the players get... like, I would take Cage, Rhodes, Lee, and Swerve. Those four in the Blackjack Battle Royal.
Okay.
So I can continue the story and then pay off Keith Lee versus Swerve Strickland. If nothing else, I deserve a big Dynamite main event, because...
that's a good point. It might get lost in the shuffle a bit.
I'll get swallowed whole by this show, I think, if they do a singles match. Because it's just cold. It's cold. And they've taken too long. And it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. Too late.
Right, let us know your thoughts on AEW Rampage on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. The SmackDown review is available right now, and myself and the Dudley Boys will be back later on today to preview Monday Night Raw. But for now, this has been the AEW Rampage review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.